Who knew that Billy and Jimmy from Smashing Pumpkins were such big Godsmack fans? How about that? Welcome, gentlemen. Good to see you back at K-Rock.
Thank you.
Hi. Are you still alive?
Yep, still alive after last night?
Barely.
How did the show go? Was it the Virgin Megastore on Sunset?
It was great. I mean, we were completely overwhelmed because when you look out in the morning, you see all that rain that was here yesterday.
And people standing in it.
It was incredible. Yeah. And, I mean, they were there from 7 a.m. in the rain, and then it finally cleared up, so... It was fantastic. We had a great time.
We talked to a guy this morning who was in line at 7:15 in the morning, and he just had a heavy jacket and an umbrella and had the greatest time of his life. He said he just had fun all day. He was just hanging out with people.
Yeah.
Waiting for you guys. You played, you went on about 6 o'clock, 6:15, something like that, 6:30, something like that, 6:45.
It was about 9:30.
We're like, come on!
It's cold! And then you played for like 40 minutes?
57
minutes.
And
okay, very good.
You want to talk about them trying to close you down? What was the story with that?
Yeah, they tried to literally, like, you know, I don't know, I'm being symbolic, but there was like a cord in the wall, and some woman, you know, tried to yank the cord.
Was she the woman with the hat with the bow?
Yeah, I think so.
She was running around crazy that whole show.
Yeah, she literally had like a conniption. And no disrespect to her or the place, I thought the thing went great. The event was well produced.
Was she a fire marshal or something? Or what?
No,
was
no, she was with the store, but apparently people in the theaters were complaining. But I mean, it seems to me you know that's going to happen.
You'd think that we wondered if anybody was up in the theaters at the Sunset 5 watching a movie. You'd think they'd put a sign up saying loud music.
Or you would just think, you know, somebody, us or the record company or somebody would just buy out a block of the movies just to keep everybody happy.
Yeah.
So after about 45 minutes, I started getting that kind of, you know, with
cut
throat.
Yeah.
Like, stop.
And you know, and all the fans who waited there since 7 o'clock in the morning want you to go as long as you want to go.
We would have played probably about an hour and a half.
Oh,
so we're
put
in a kind of difficult position between possibly causing a riot and satiating the fans' stuff.
Right.
And, it's very dangerous. It's, you know, you've got a lot of people been outside all day, so we were put in a very awkward position.
Sure. How many of these things have you done, these record store mini concerts?
Well, we've done about 35 where we've actually gone and signed. I would say of those 35, maybe 15 to 20 have been where we actually played. Sometimes just in the record store. In some places, the fire marshal shut the in-store down, so we just found a club and did a free concert.
Oh, really?
So we've had to really kind of move and groove on
because I've had a lot of trouble. I guess it's because when you were trying to do the free show
in Chicago,
all that kind of stuff. I mean, you have fire marshals following you around, shutting you down everywhere you go.
Well, it's I know this may sound shocking, but people want rock and roll like to be very kind of safe these days.
Right.
They don't want anything unpredictable. They literally want you to predict what's going to happen, and you can't.
Right.
And we're trying to break the boundaries of what's conventional. You know, I know Enrique Iglesias played at in there, but I mean, the idea of putting a rock concert in there last night and doing a full-scale rock concert, I thought was pretty interesting. And I think that was part of the problem. I can't imagine the woman was running around making the cut sign while Enrique was on stage because everybody's dancing, you know.
But here was the weird thing last night. Everybody was well-behaved. Everybody was really excited and having a good time. Nobody was destroying anything. There was
rushing the stage, nothing like that.
There was nothing going on. You'd think they would have been fine for you to play however long.
And that event could have been, you know, literally a washout yesterday with the weather and the cold.
Right.
And the fact that the place was packed and everybody was in a good mood, it seems like you'd have a little more leeway.
Right.
Well, and I was just impressed because I know that you and Jimmy both ran the LA Marathon yesterday. I'm thinking, wow, how could they do that and then go play?
Yeah, we were pretty tired, but
we actually won it, but then like stopped like about a half a block short.
Oh, is that right?
Let somebody else win.
We knew we could do it.
We won last year, remember?
You did it really for yourselves more than the glory of actually winning.
The very famous Kenyan runner Billy Corgan in our studio right here. Now, is the whole point of this is basically just it's a little giveaway to the fans saying, hey, come see me for free, but it's also to say we're back, we got the new record out, check it out. I mean, it seems to me like what you're doing is just not taking for granted that people are going to go out automatically and support the band just because you got a new record.
Well, we found on the last record that we didn't get the kind of automatic support that we hoped for.
Right.
And I think part of that
was that hurtful?
Well, it wasn't an immediate sense of like what happened, but then when I actually sat down and really thought about it, everything that the band had always been about being very close to its fan base, we'd gotten so big that we'd lost sight of that, and we started to kind of take that for granted. So on this album, we weren't going to take anything for granted. And, you know, you know, this station in particular, you know, we've always had great support from, so I have no complaint here. But, you know, a lot of stations kind of turn their back on us, you know, unnamed networks and things. Suddenly it was like, you know, we don't need you anymore. We're not even willing to help you. And we were put in a very awkward position. And it was like suddenly everything the band represented, its connections to its fans and kind of raging across the earth, was like there was nothing there.
Right.
And, you know, you start to look desperate if you start trying to grasp for straws. Mm-hmm. So we weren't taking anything for granted. If all we get out of this is just like reconnecting with our fans, we're fine. We're happy. We've been through so much. We don't, you know, the rest is fine. I mean, whatever, it comes or it doesn't.
Do you have some sort of a number in mind that you consider that's a successful record? Because, I mean, let's face it, there are thousands and thousands of bands out there, and almost any of them would trade whatever soul they have to sell as many copies as you did of Adore. I mean, it was hardly a bad record.
Yeah, it's a platinum record, so it's hard.
Yeah, I mean, seriously.
But for you guys, the standard was much bigger.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a twofold answer. I think we've already succeeded because everybody's very excited and seems to be very interested in the record. So I think we've succeeded on that front. As far as the literal business goes, I don't think most fans care whether we sell one copy or 100, as long as they like the record. I'm sure out there somebody's got a magic number in their head of what we're supposed to sell, but...
But you don't have a number that you'll be happy with?
I think it's a feel thing, mm-hmm, you know.
Right.
Everybody around us seemed to leave, even though Adore was a platinum record, everybody around us seemed to leave with like a bitter taste in their mouth, including the band. And, you know, you could go on forever about that, but everybody seems to be happy now. So it's a lot more positive environment and everything. So
I'm so surprised to hear you say that, Billy, although I've you know, read your statements to that effect in interviews over the past couple of years, because I thought some of your best stuff has been on Adore. I mean, there's some really just beautiful songs on that record. Yeah, it was a little bit of a diversion from some of the stuff you'd done before, but you can't make the same record five albums in a row. You just can't do that.
Well, it's counterintuitive to ask an alternative band to stay between the lines.
Right.
Alternative music came out of being unpredictable and pushing boundaries, so it's almost weird to ask us to be what we used to be when we were being dangerous, but don't be dangerous anymore.
Right.
It doesn't work in the programming.
But success kind of makes that happen to you, doesn't it? I mean, once you become really super successful at something, now all of a sudden everybody expects you to do the... Now you've got boxes. They want that success to continue. They want you to keep doing the same stuff. Is that frustrating? Jimmy?
I think it's very un-pumpkin-like to do the same thing, you know?
Right. So, but I mean, that's why I'm just saying
better at this point.
What other people think about you. You think your hardcore fans don't expect that of you?
No, I don't. I think they know better, and I think the record company at this point knows better as well.
Was there a conscious decision to go anti-Adore when you went into the studio to make Lucina?
No. In a kind of nice organic way, Jimmy not being in the band, us taking a completely different approach, it really refueled our desire to go back and play loud again.
Mm-hmm.
It came from us. It wasn't... That was the problem. When we got... By the time we got around to Adore, even if Jimmy had been in the band, we were so tired.
Right.
And so kind of worn out. And we felt almost kind of like there's nowhere else to go.
Right.
And there's this almost like... So we went back to the beginning of just playing like little kind of Cure-esque kind of songs in the bedroom. And we just started over. So this record has a lot to do with the fact that we were willing to back off it and re-find ourselves.
You know, it was we all saw the headlines and thought, wow, what bad fortune to have Jimmy back in the fold, and now the problems with Darcy seem to be getting out of control. Was that did that make it tense or difficult during the course of recording this new record?
No, it was fine.
No, it was probably the easiest and the hardest record we ever made at the same time. I think
Well, that helps us a lot, Jimmy. Thank you.
What does that mean?
It was really black at some point, and then it was really white.
Right, exactly.
How was it the easiest?
I just think it's the most natural record we've ever made. I don't think it's very brainy. I think it's very hearty. You know, I think it's very of the heart as opposed to of the brain. And
how was it the hardest?
For me, you know, not playing for 2 years. I mean, I really had to physically work to make this record. But physical work is easy to do because it's very routine and it's very regimented. But you know. Soul work is very natural on the other hand.
Did that make sense? It didn't make sense to me.
No, I didn't get that either.
I know what
you
he means. I was looking to Billy for some...
Could you tell me what time it is?
you speak pumpkin, though, Billy. We don't.
Yeah.
We need a translator. I'm sorry. All right, well, we'll give Jimmy a chance to regroup. Let's take a quick break because I have to pee anyway. Our guests in the studio are Billy Corgan and Jimmy Chamberlain. The new album is called Machina, Machines of God. We'll find out more about that and play something from the new record, too, when we come back on K-Rock.